news tonight, the threat of cholera in Haiti in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew.
The impact of the hurricane on extremely fragile infrastructure and system is going to create or increase the risk of waterborne diseases, whether it's diarrhea or cholera in particular.
Women and men came out today to protest Donald Trump and his misogynistic anti-woman rhetoric, which works to normalize rape culture.
This kind of thinking went out hopefully decades ago. And so it's shocking. It's shocking that the nominee of a major party for president of the United States is now espousing things that many of us believed had been thrown out with the 1950s.
And activists continue to rise up against companies which threaten our environment. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, October 12th, 2016. In Haiti, the situation is dire in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew, and the population is now facing the added deadly threat of cholera. The World Health Organization says at least 200 suspected cholera cases have been reported, this across southwestern Haiti, since Matthew hit. It has pledged to send 1 million doses of cholera vaccine to Haiti. Cholera was unknown in Haiti until the fall of 2010. That's when the disease was apparently introduced by UN peacekeepers from Nepal, part of a contingent of troops who had been rotating through the troubled country since 2004. They improperly disposed of waste from their base in the Central Plateau, and it quickly spread through the network of rivers that people rely on to bathe, wash clothing, and for drinking water. Since then, cholera has killed roughly 10,000 people, and it has sickened more than 800,000 in the country. The wreckage left behind the storm has created perfect conditions for spreading the waterborne disease. Today, the Navy has sent out one of its large warships to Haiti, bringing more than 1,100 sailors and 600 Marines to aid the country. The UN's May Yakub spoke with Najwa Meki of UNICEF on what she's seeing on the ground in Haiti.
In a town called Lekai, which is almost 6 or 7 hours by road from the capital, Port-au-Prince, and it's in one of the areas worst affected by the hurricane. What I'm seeing and what a lot of colleagues who've been even further to the affected areas are telling me is that the extent of the damage is massive. Lots of homes have been destroyed in a town like Jérémy, one of the worst affected areas. Almost 60 to 70% at least of the homes have been destroyed. We're talking about some of the most vulnerable communities in Haiti. They don't have much to start with. A lot of their homes are flimsy constructions, so they couldn't resist the impact of the winds and of the rains that hit them with Hurricane Matthew. So the damage is massive, and it's going to take years and years for them to recover.
How was the effect of Matthew on children?
Any other emergency, always children are the ones who suffer the most, unfortunately. And what we know is that the situation of children affected by the hurricane is going to be tremendous. We estimate that there are at least 500,000 children who will need humanitarian assistance as a result of this hurricane. Children have lost their homes. They've lost their school books. Some of the children we met have told us how devastated, how scared they were when the hurricane made landfall, how it took away their homes, how it took away their textbooks, how it took away their school uniforms. And they're very worried about what they're going to do next, how they're going to go back to school, and where they're going to live after their homes have been destroyed.
Yesterday, UN agencies expressed concerns with regard to cholera outbreaks in Haiti. What are the latest numbers in this regard?
Cholera has been present in Haiti since 2010, and even though it's been decreasing over the past few years, it's still persistent. We know that since the beginning of the year alone, there's been 27,000 suspected cases of cholera at least, and we estimate that one-third of those are children. Now, this is a disease that comes in a backdrop of really fragile and poor water and sanitation infrastructure. We know that only 1 in 3 people in Haiti have access to adequate latrines. We only that only 3 out of 5 people here have access to safe water. And so the impact of the hurricane on extremely fragile infrastructure and system is going to create or increase the risk of waterborne diseases, whether it's diarrhea or cholera in particular.
What is UNICEF doing now to alleviate the suffering of children and their families?
So our priority has been and will continue to be to make sure that the families affected have access to safe water and sanitation. This is going to be crucial to contain and limit the spread of cholera and also prevent the spread of other diseases like diarrhea. So we've been putting distributing supplies, water treatment supplies, containers for water storage. We've also been providing critical centers, health centers, which have suffered extensively from the hurricane. We've been providing them with water supplies as well. And one of the other priorities is to make sure children go back to school as soon as possible. So we estimate that at least 300 schools have been damaged because of the hurricane. Hundreds of others are being used as shelters, and this has left more than 100,000 children out of school. So it will be important and crucial for us to make sure that they have opportunities to go back to learning as soon as possible. And we'll also be working on making sure that children who might have been separated from their families because of the force of the hurricane be reunited with their families again.
The UN's May Yakub spoke with Najwa Meki of UNICEF. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is accusing the Clintons of cashing in on Haiti's deadly 2010 earthquake. He is citing State Department emails obtained by the Republican National Committee through a public record request detailed in an ABC News story. At issue is whether friends of former President Bill Clinton, referred to as Friends of Bill or FOB in the emails, received preferential treatment or contracts from the State Department in the immediate aftermath of the 7.0 magnitude earthquake on January 12, 2010. More than 230,000 people died. The State Department and Clinton campaign said Clinton supporters received no preferential treatment.
Donald Trump, it's time to walk!
Anger with Donald Trump's anti-woman rhetoric is growing, and when he says he respects women, he is not believed.
And I think that is a joke. He does not respect women.
Fatim Ba from the Bronx came out today to Manhattan. She's protesting Trump in front of his international hotel and tower in Columbus Circle.
I mean, for him, the way he treats Hillary on a regular basis, I don't have a respect for him. The way he treats Hillary, that's the way he's treating the woman, all the women around. I do not like it, no respect for women, never. The things he has said on the tapes, things that he does on a regular basis, the way he's talked to Miss Universe, the pageants, who needs it? We don't need him at the head of our state, not me. We do not appreciate the way he's treating the woman. So he does not respect women at all.
Ba says once you attack one woman, you attack every woman. And New Yorkers are angry with the Republican Party, which supported the nomination of this candidate.
As far as the Republican Party is concerned, I mean, they should have walked from Trump long ago.
Jean Bucaria is with Now New York City.
Here is a man who has denigrated Mexican people, immigrants, immigrant women, who has put down people with disabilities, who has called for a ban on all Muslim people from entering the country. And on top of that is a misogynist who has called women pigs, who has a long history of being sexist against women, aside from the comments that just leaked that he did in 2005. So it's shameful that it got this far. It's shameful that he got this far. I think a lot of Republicans should have distanced themselves from him a long time ago. But we are glad, as a National Organization for Women and as an organization that works to fight violence against women, that there is finally a line that people are willing to draw in the sand. And we are here to draw that line to say, this stops now.
This stops now! This stops now! This stops now!
Trump says his recently disclosed comments, which normalize rape culture and sexual assault, were locker room comments, as if they should be dismissed. But they have drawn a firestorm of criticism and drop in support. And for many women, that so-called locker room talk has brought back memories of abuse. Melissa Quexenberry is from North Carolina, which she says is Trump country. She is a rape survivor who was assaulted when she was only 6 years old.
Donald Trump is unfit to be a husband, a friend, a colleague, a boss, much less a president. He is ignorant on foreign affairs, on international affairs. He has obviously no diplomacy skills.
Quexenberry says people following Trump are afraid.
And he is feeding off of that fear and that economic insecurity and all the other insecurities that they have amongst themselves in their own world. And it is shameful and disgraceful that he's gotten this far.
Donald Trump must go away. Sexual violence not okay.
And what
Donald
about
Trump
sexual assault in the military? Trump tweeted, 26,000 unreported sexual assaults in the military, only 238 convictions. What did these geniuses expect when they put men and women together? Captain Brenda Berkman is New York City's first female firefighter. She says when women are assaulted or harassed in the workplace, they are told to just leave and find another job. But many women don't have that luxury.
By his words, Donald Trump is encouraging harassment and assault in the workplace. If he thinks it's okay to assault women in the military, I mean, after all, what did women in the military expect when they went into that organization? Then would he feel the same way about women in the fire service and women in police departments and women in other organizations in construction and jobs where men dominate? Does that mean that women also should expect to be assaulted and harassed in those jobs? This kind of thinking went out hopefully decades ago. And so it's shocking. It's shocking that the nominee of a major party for president of the United States is now espousing things that many of us believed had been thrown out with the 1950s.
Reject Donald Trump! Reject Donald Trump!
Bernadette DeSalle comes from a large upstate New York family. She says none of them objectified women the way Trump has done.
I grew up one of 12 kids, so I have 6 brothers and 5 sisters, so I had a very interesting childhood, but it was upstate New York where it's very Republican, and there's still a lot of people up there who think he's the better choice, which is really sad. So we have a lot of work to do to get out the vote and change people's minds.
And within the Latino community, a new report out today from Make the Road New York speaks to the strength of the Latino vote across the state. That's 14% in Nassau County and 16% of the vote in Suffolk County. And Latino voters are fighting back against Trump and his backers. They are looking for candidates who address their concerns, concerns about immigration reform on the federal level, and locally, those who support services which address the needs of immigrant communities. As well, Latino voters are looking at the issues of health care, housing, and education, where many Latinos are in school districts with the lowest level of investment from New York State, but yet the highest level of debt from state funding. Walter Barrientos is with Make the Road Action Long Island.
You know, what we're hearing is that, of course, there's a lot of attention on national elections, and in particular, of course, the presidential candidates. But folks, I think this year is different because they also have seen some of the same rhetoric coming up from local candidates.
Local candidates who are staunch Trump supporters, like Lee Selden, who represents East Patchogue, Southampton, and East Hampton.
He was one of the first in New York to invite the rest of the Republicans at the state level to line up behind Donald Trump. And since then has issued many statements and has stood for Donald Trump, including hosting a number of fundraisers with Donald Trump just a few blocks away from the site where a Latino immigrant, Ecuadorian Marcelo Lucero, was killed just a few years ago by white teenagers who were looking for Latinos to hurt. So that's Lee Selden. One of the other state senators, for example, is Senator Croce from Long Island, who has actually been the proponent of some of the policies that would actually strip away the protections for many immigrants, including victims of domestic violence, when interacting with state and city agencies, when reporting issues like domestic violence or hate crimes. And so those are some of the candidates that Latinos and other immigrants on Long Island and their supporters have been paying attention to, often in disbelief, because some of these folks represent districts where the Latino population is growing, and in particular, people who can vote.
Another seeking re-election is Jack Martins from Nassau County, who has been opposing pro-immigrant policies, even though he is actually of immigrant descent. As the Trump campaign begins to implode and it loses backing, Barriento says this doesn't seem to be the case on Long Island.
We have not seen them pulling away on Long Island. Many of them, we have been putting pressure on them from early on in this campaign to demonstrate that they were not standing up for hate. And they have refused to do so until now, you know, up to today. And I think that that's what we hope this report will do, which will make it clear either to them or the people who will replace them, and the people in many of these campaigns, to ensure that they are paying attention to this critical mass. And if they're not paying attention based on humanity and the morality that I think all of us want to bring into our democracy, that they are at least following the numbers, if that's what they're following, and that they pay attention to the increasing numbers of not only Latinos, but other immigrants on Long Island who are naturalizing and joining the voter roll.
And there are a number of efforts Make the Road is engaged in to get out the vote and to support candidates who bring people together rather than separating them. You can find out more by going to maketheroadaction.org. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. This week, just north of New York City, four people crawled inside the lengths of pipeline along the Hudson River to stop Spectra Energy from dragging its gas pipeline under the Hudson River, very close to Indian Point, the troubled nuclear reactors in Buchanan, New York. Jill Kupferman is with the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project and the National Lawyers Guild.
Protests against the pipeline that's coming across, and the main objection is all the other problems with pipelines. It happens to be near Indian Point, so there's a major problem. They're concerned about the effects, if there's any type of seismic shift or whatever, that one's going to affect the other.
And what's the legal recourse to this?
The legal recourse is with before a group called FERC, which is a federal emergency, draconian court with no answer to the public or no answer to the executive department. So the only thing we could really push is for the president to step in, or for Senator Schumer to raise objections.
WBAI's Ken Gale, host of Ecologic, has more.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's budget is dependent on the number of projects they regulate, and they approve almost every one that the gas pipeline industry submits. For years, they operated without notice. But in the last few years, the rubber stamp machine of FERC has been getting criticized by national and local grassroots environmental groups. When along with FERC, courts and political leaders were unresponsive. Environmentalists held rallies. They held marches on FERC's office in Washington. They made online petitions, submitted letters to local newspapers, and did civil disobedience to directly stop individual projects. That's what the Standing Rock Lakota are doing in North Dakota, and what environmentalists did this week to stop the Spectra pipeline near the Indian Point nuclear power plant. The Spectra pipeline, 42 inches in diameter, is a high-pressure pipeline. It would bring radioactive fracked methane from Pennsylvania to liquefy natural gas plants on the Atlantic coast. Since most of the natural gas plants haven't been built yet, Spectra says the gas is to supply Massachusetts, despite statements by various agencies in Massachusetts that they don't need it. Four protesters emerged from the pipeline at 11:30 Monday night, having been in there for 17 hours. J.K. Canepa of New York City wrote, "We do these things not just because we live in the shadow of an imminent and unspeakable hazard, but because we recognize the beginnings of a terrible change in the life support system for all of us in fiercer storms, the searing droughts, the wars over dwindling resources. And we have to call these things out over the distracting noise of popular culture, pierce through the haze of denial, and reach those people who do know but feel there's nothing they can do about it. As J.K. Canepa says, we have to take action." And it looks like all pipeline companies are now going to have to pay for more security to force activists to change strategy. Those four may have only delayed building this dangerous pipeline for a day, but they've made all pipeline construction more expensive. Ken Gale, WBAI News, New York.
In other environmental news, there is reaction against Governor Cuomo's plan to force electricity customers to subsidize upstate nuclear power plants. Andrea Sears has more.
More than 70 environmental and consumer groups have signed a letter asking Governor Andrew Cuomo to stop a plan to have electric consumers subsidize aging upstate nuclear power plants. Under a plan approved by the Public Service Commission, ratepayers would pay at least $7.6 billion over 12 years to keep the plants operating. The governor claims they are needed to meet the state's goal of getting 50% of its electricity from clean, renewable sources by 2030. But Carl Grossman, professor of journalism at SUNY Old Westbury, says nuclear power has no place in a clean energy plan.
Nuclear power is not a clean nor renewable source. It's dirty and it's dangerous and it's very expensive.
The governor says closing the aging nuclear power plants would cost more than 1,500 jobs and vital tax revenue in upstate counties. Grossman says 60% of the subsidy would be borne by downstate consumers who already pay some of the highest electric rates in the country. Investing that money in renewables such as wind and solar would produce far more jobs.
Studies have shown that if $7.6 billion would be invested in truly clean, renewable energy, they'd be something like 80,000 new jobs.
The New York Public Interest Research Group and Food and Water Watch have launched an online petition campaign to block the plan from going into effect. According to Grossman, the PSC could still reverse itself and cancel the subsidy, but if it won't, there may be another solution.
If the Public Service Commission doesn't have the independence, a good number of New York State legislators have been moving to undo the terrible thing that Andrew Cuomo has done.
For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
And finally, this is the 15th year that Guantanamo continues to operate, but the closed down Guantanamo campaign continues. Former prisoner Shaker Amir says it needs to be closed. He urges President Obama to shut the prison down before he leaves office.
For a long time, before even I got freed from Guantanamo, I knew for no doubt that Obama wants to close Guantanamo, and I believed him, and I still believe he wants to do it. But unfortunately, I felt like he need the strength to close Guantanamo from within himself, not from the outside. He need to believe on what he's doing is right. Not wait for everybody to approve what he's doing. Because most of the time, if we want to do something, we will find a lot of people against of what we want to do. So my message to him, if you really want to be a hero, if you really want to be a great man who do something to bring peace to the world, to bring an end of Guantanamo, you just need to shut it down. You need to look forward and just do it. There is so much things happening in Guantanamo that the whole world doesn't know about. Until now, I didn't talk about it because I'm not ready to talk about it yet. But there is so much going on there that I'm sure that we need to close that place down. And I'm sure you know so many things that happening there is not right. First of all, keeping somebody all these years behind bars, in cages, without any communication with the outside world, in the name of what? Of justice? You have to know that even if these people did something wrong, they already served their time, and they need to go back to their families. And I hope President Obama, in this 100 days, that he really think to do something out of the ordinary and try to really do something without looking around him, making sure that everybody approve what he's doing. Carry that, as I say, carry the torch in this dark time that we are living and lead and go forward with it and let the light goes in front of everybody to see it in front of them that you are doing it without hesitating, that you are doing the right thing. Even if they don't approve you today, but I have no doubt in the future, the whole world will remember that you did something great, because closing that place is gonna help the whole world, not just the people inside Guantanamo, because that place is influencing a lot of other countries to start the same thing. And we know that a lot of countries nowadays, they're thinking of doing their own Guantanamo. So please, before something like this start, close Guantanamo and shut that place down. That's my message to you and to your government, and I hope that you will succeed to do it as soon as possible.
former Guantanamo prisoner Shaker Amir. You can learn more by going to closeguantanamo.org. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, October 12, 2016. The news was produced with May Yacoub, Ken Gale, Andrea Sears, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.